friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is Dan Friedel in for VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. We're happy to be here with you on this sunny Tuesday in Washington, D.C., where the weather forecasters are expecting a high temperature today of over 32 degrees Celsius, one of the warmest days of the year so far, which is only fitting since we've got a hot show for you. But before we get too sweaty, let's cool things down with this story on a grassroots ice hockey team that played a recent game against foreign diplomats in Nairobi, Kenya. The Kenyan Ice Lions are hoping to get enough experience to qualify for the 2022 Winter Olympics in China. My VOA colleague Sarah Kimani has this report. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
East Africa's only ice hockey team, the Kenya Ice Lions, this past weekend hosted a tournament on the region's only ice hockey rink. The exhibition pitted the Ice Lions against teams of diplomats from Europe and North America.
It's a great feeling, especially for the team Kenya, since this is our first game which we are hosting here in Kenya.
Only five other African countries have ice hockey teams: Algeria, Egypt, Morocco, South Africa, and Tunisia. The Ice Lions grabbed international attention last year for bringing ice hockey to Kenya, a country known for long-distance runners, not winter sports.
It's a young team, but I think they're already playing an excellent game, and I must say I've been very impressed by the development lately. I had the chance to play a little bit them before, and I think they're developing all the time, and they are already now a very good team. I like their spirit, team spirit. It's really good.
The Ice Lions are using these friendly games to practice in hopes of qualifying for the 2022 Winter Olympics. They also want to bring more attention and support to ice hockey in Kenya.
Ice hockey comes at a time when people are looking for something fresh and something that is a surprise element in terms of sports.
The U.S. diplomats team won the tournament in a close match with the Ice Lions and by just 1 point. But the real winners are Kenya's ice hockey fans and those who want to see the sport grow in East Africa. Sarah Kimani for VOA News, Nairobi.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sunny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Speaking of the Olympics, as we mentioned on Monday's show, the big news coming out of the IOC was the awarding of the 2026 Winter Olympics to Italy. The IOC members voted 47-34 for the Milan Cortina bid. The other finalist was Stockholm, Sweden. Interestingly, Sweden has never had a Winter Games in spite of its success in winter sports. IOC President Thomas Bach said the public support for the project in Italy swung the vote in favor of the Milan Cortina bid. The IOC will fund about half of the projected $1.7 billion operating budget for the Games. My colleague Steve Miller joins us now with this report about the fiscal optimism for an Olympic Games that's a bit farther out, and that's the Summer Games of 2028, which will be back in Southern California, Los Angeles in particular, 44 years after the city hosted the 1984 Games. Sporty greetings, Steve.
And a sporty greetings to you, Dan. Milan Cortina d'Ampezzo beat out Stockholm Ore for the 2026 hosting rights after four other bids: Switzerland's Sion, Japan's Sapporo, Austria's Graz, and Canada's Calgary dropped out with concerns over the size and cost of the event. While more and more cities see the Olympics as a money pit, bullish Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti said at the LA Sports Summit he expects the 2028 Summer Games to produce a $1 billion surplus. And that's a tune that hasn't changed for the mayor. Following the successful bid, Garcetti spoke of the opportunity laid before the City of Angels.
We know that the Games have never been an impediment in this city to progress.
In fact, they have been the spark for progress. In 1932, when we became, in many ways, a global city and saved the Olympics in the midst of the Depression. In 1984, when we became a significant global city and hosted the Olympics, created jobs, and made a model that now lasts in the Olympic movement. In 2028, we're going to do that again, become one of the most indispensable global cities, one that reaches for opportunities like the Olympic Games and simultaneously addresses the challenges that we have, to unite the city, to address poverty and our challenges with traffic and housing. We know that by looking 11 years in the future, we have the opportunity to imagine what our city and our lives will be like. And this gives us the opportunity to come together.
Now, Los Angeles is not solely focused on the Olympics. It's also aggressively pursuing other major sporting events to cash in on decades of investment in facilities. Los Angeles already has an impressive schedule in the coming years, hosting the Major League Baseball All-Star Game in 2020, the 2022 NFL Super Bowl, the 2023 College Football Championship, and a number of games during the 2026 Soccer World Cup. An economic impact analysis commissioned by the Los Angeles Sport Council found the sports industry generated $6.3 billion in the greater Los Angeles region last year, including $327 million in taxes for state and local governments, while supporting nearly 40,000 jobs. But sustainability is now seen as a cornerstone of any Olympic bid. Hosting the Summer Games for a third time in 2028, Los Angeles organizers boast they could hold them next year with most of the venues already in place. Talk of white elephants and cost overruns dominate every Olympic cycle. But the Los Angeles Sports Council believes it has developed a hosting prototype that changes the discussion. Speaking to Reuters news agency, David Siegel, the president and CEO of the Los Angeles Sports Council and the Southern California Committee for the Olympic Games, said, quote, "I would not be surprised if we were the case study more and more cities and countries follow moving forward because it has been so successful. Quite frankly, you need to have a plan for sustainability and be able to execute it to get any of these events. I think what we are doing is only going to amplify that idea," end quote. The next stop for the Olympics is Tokyo in 2020. Back to you, Dan.
Thank you, Steve. Keeping with the Olympic theme today and the concept of celebrating sports and physical activity, after all, that's what the Greeks wanted to do the first time around, I'm transitioning the conversation to something I've been thinking about a lot lately, and that's the value of sports in society. Here on the Sunny Side of Sports, we talk a lot about the best of the best in their respective sports. For example, I know people will be excitedly watching the FIFA Women's World Cup and the first round games at the African Cup of Nations today, but on sports fields around the world, both kids and adults who will never earn a dollar from their favorite sport are playing just for fun. I wonder, however, if all of the spotlight on the best of the very best makes it harder for people who love a game to stick with it after childhood and into their teenage years and even into adulthood. After all, these days, if you're not being celebrated with an Instagram post for doing something amazing, it's hard to keep at whatever your pastime of choice is. I decided to ask an expert this very same question. Let's listen. We're joined now on the Sunny Side of Sports by Emily Stetz, a coordinator at the Aspen Institute, which is a leadership and policy studies think tank based here in Washington, D.C. She works on the Project Play 2020 initiative, and we're here to talk about getting kids more access to sports as they grow up. Welcome to the show, Emily.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So, Emily, one of the things that I think about a lot as a former child athlete, and I played baseball a little bit in college, and in my 40s, I continue to play recreational softball, is how important sports have been to me, not just as a way to, you know, move into adolescence and adulthood and be competitive and have some, you know, physical excellence on the baseball field or the football field or wherever it is, but how important sports have been for me in developing strong relationships and making good friends at all levels of my life. So where do you think that ranks as far as the way parents should be thinking about how their children are playing sports these days?
Of course. That's a great question to start off with, because I think what we see a lot in the youth sports landscape, both in the U.S. and I think in some places internationally as well, is more of a focus on using sports as a means to an end to get a kid somewhere. So we want you to get a college scholarship. We want you to go pro. And I think so much of the work that we're trying to do at Project Play and with so many of our partners is really to talk about all of the added benefits that being active in general through sports is going to give you. So, of course, we know that physical activity and physical literacy is so important, and moving when you're early in terms of compounded effects and health benefits down the line of being physically healthy. But as you mentioned, and as our program has grown into this space, there is so much more support emotionally and mentally that sports can give you in life. You mentioned building relationships, which there's a lot of life skills and a lot of things that people learn in sports that are going to help them in their academic life, that will help them in the workforce, that helps you be part of families and friendships and communities and really be active as a global citizen. So that's really how our program orients itself to the space in terms of we want to build healthy communities through sports. But I think you've hit on an idea of saying we really want to make sure that parents and stakeholders, coaches, teachers, are also aware of this holistic view so that we can get everyone on the same page and say, this is the pipeline that we're trying to build so that we can have active, healthy kids and active, healthy citizens, not just a small amount of very elite athletes, for example.
I'm Dan Friedel in for Sunny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. I'm joined by Emily Stetz from the Aspen Institute, and we're talking about the initiative that's called Project Play 2020. Here we are. We're in the second half now, just about, of 2019. So 2020 is just around the corner. We have the Olympic Games in Tokyo coming up next summer. I just saw an article that said we're under 400 days away to the opening ceremony of the Olympics. What are some of the things that you're trying to get people to recognize as we head into 2020?
So Project Play 2020 is a really ambitious collective impact initiative that is gathering folks from cross sectors, so technology, media, philanthropy, from the sports industry field, among others, coming together around the same table saying, we want to raise youth sport participation rates. So based on information and data that we have from the Sports Fitness Industry Association, we know that the number of kids who are active to a healthy level is not where we want it to be right now. Kids are playing less sports than they used to for a lot of different reasons in the youth sports ecosystem. So this group came together from all of these different and at times competing competitors who are at the same table saying, none of us are okay with the fact that this is happening, and we want to know what we can do to change that. So the specific KPIs that are at the focus of Project Play 2020 are increasing the number of kids who are active to a healthy level, increasing the number of kids who are participating in sports because of the benefits we know that come from participation, both physical, mental, emotional, and relational. So as we look at 2020 and coming around the initiative, the group has focused on a couple different ways that they have wanted to impact those KPIs. They've settled on these work streams, and we have the weight of some incredible organizations behind this initiative, including ESPN and NBC Sports, Sports Engine, Amazon, some retailers like Nike and Under Armour, along with some technical advisors and folks on the academic side. So the Hospital for Special Surgery, the Global Obesity Prevention Center at Johns Hopkins University, and the CDC, all of them sit at this table together looking ahead. And yes, we have these incredible markers of, say, the Olympics every 4 years. And as we know, the Olympics are coming to LA in 2028. So a lot of us are using that as opportunities to say, by this time, we want to be able to show the world exactly what it is we're doing with youth sports participation and youth being active in this country, to show how much of a holistic model we have. Yes, not only do we have some of the most incredible elite athletes in the world, as we can see on the Olympic stage every 2 to 4 years, but we also have this other element of grassroots youth sport participation that is complementing that as well. And the U.S. Olympic Committee is also one of our partners on Project Play 2020, and they have been an invaluable partner as they've been putting forth their American development model, which really is the grassroots side of encouraging youth sports participation and really looking at building up that base and that foundation of those athletes, whether or not they go on to be elite athletes or not. It's really about all the benefits that we've been talking about, and our partners recognize that, which is really going to help us make an impact.
That's Emily Stutz with the Aspen Institute. I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. We'll have more with Emily later this week. We'll be back after this short VOA programming notice to celebrate some more high-level athletic excellence.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. One women's soccer team that was celebrating on Monday was Team USA, which narrowly avoided an upset in France against Spain. As I mentioned on Monday's show, the game was tied at 1 heading into halftime. VOA intern Ryan Handel is here now to catch us up on what happened in the remainder of the match and how those watching reacted to this surprisingly close contest. Sporty greetings, Ryan.
Sporty greetings, Dan. The United States advanced at the Women's World Cup yesterday, but barely. After outscoring their opponents 18-0 in the group stage, the U.S. was seriously tested for the first time against Spain. The Americans, who remain the tournament favorites, just eked by the Spaniards in a 2-1 game rife with controversy. Both of the United States goals came via penalty kicks, the second of which many people felt was undeserved. Let's take a closer look at that exciting game and some of the social media reactions to the contentious goal. In the 5th minute of the game, American Tobin Heath was tripped inside the penalty box by Maria León of Spain. Although León appeared to barely touch Heath, Heath stumbled, and the penalty kick was awarded. U.S. veteran Megan Rapinoe calmly launched the penalty into the back of the net to give the Americans the early lead. But that was hardly the most debated call of yesterday's match. Just 2 minutes after Rapinoe's penalty goal, an errant pass by U.S. goalkeeper Alyssa Neher led to a turnover and a beautiful lob into the corner of the goal for Spanish striker Jennifer Hermoso. People around the world were jumping with excitement at the impressive goal and the possibility of a huge upset of the U.S. Australian sports network Optus Sport tweeted, "Jennifer Hermoso, what a finish. Spain have leveled it up early against USA. Televisión Jamaica tweeted, "Goal! Jennifer Hermoso draws Spain level." Despite Hermoso's highlight reel strike, the defining moment came midway through the second half. Spain's Virginia Torresilla lightly contacted American Rose Lavelle inside the penalty box, and again the Spaniard was called for tripping. And for the second time, Rapinoe made her penalty kick to give the U.S. the lead. The term soft penalty was often thrown around to describe the 50-50 call. In fact, 150 tweets in the past 24 hours included the phrase soft penalty. Opinions on whether the call was correct were widely varied. Optus Sports analyst said, "I can't see any contact there." While the U.S. newspaper The Indianapolis Star tweeted, "U.S. women's national team wins on a soft penalty, but it was 100% the right call." But the American woman held on to win, and as ESPN said, survive and advance. The United States will move on to play the host France in the quarterfinals on Friday. France had trouble in the first knockout round as well. They needed extra time to defeat a scrappy Brazil squad. In other Women's World Cup news, Sweden edged Canada 1-0 on a goal from Stina Blackstenius. They'll play Germany in the quarters. Overall, it was quite an exhilarating day in women's soccer. Back to you, Dan.
Thanks, Ryan. That's great. The last two games of the first knockout round are today. That's Italy facing China, and Italy currently leads 1-0 at halftime. And the Netherlands going up against Japan in a couple hours. We'll have more for you as the week progresses. It's getting exciting over there in France. In Egypt, the first round of the Africa Cup of Nations continues. As we mentioned yesterday, Ivory Coast defeated South Africa 1-0. And in the day's remaining games, Tunisia tied Angola 1-1 and Mali defeated Mauritania 4-1. The final matches of the opening round are tonight, Cameroon against Guinea-Bissau, and Ghana against Benin later on. We hope you enjoy the following matches, and we'll have the scores on Wednesday. They're playing basketball. We love that basketball. You know that song means it's time to talk some NBA, so to get things tipped off, my colleague Steve Miller is here with this report on what Golden State Warriors star Steph Curry has been up to since the Warriors fell in the NBA Finals almost 2 weeks ago. Sporty greetings, Steve.
And a sporty greetings to you, Dan. And you're absolutely right. For many, there's just no stopping once the season ends. And that happens to be true for Golden State Warriors player Steph Curry. On Sunday, he said the defeat of his team during the National Basketball Association Finals was tough.
It was an amazing season. We went to five straight finals and did something that hadn't been done since the 1960s, I believe. Obviously, we didn't win, and that's a tough feeling walking off the court, but very proud of the way that we played all year. We dealt with some injuries. We dealt with some ups and downs, but the story's still going. So a lot of people said this was going to be the end, but I'm not going to let that happen. So it's going to be fun to come back and chase more championships next year and beyond.
The six-time NBA All-Star and two-time NBA MVP award winner was in Tokyo for a two-day camp to train students from 30 different high schools and said that he was also looking forward to the Tokyo Olympics next year.
I know the energy here is going to be amazing. And so, to your point, I haven't played in the Olympics before. I played in two World Cup teams, so I've had the experience of representing my country, playing for the national team, but the Olympics, from everybody that I've talked to that's played, there's no comparison to that experience. And again, being in Tokyo should be even better.
This happened to be Curry's third visit to Tokyo in the last 2 years. That's all I have. Back to you, Dan.
Thanks, Steve. And that will wrap up the June 25th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. We'll have more NBA for you tomorrow. Thanks to VOA producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nashwan Kale. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa. on the next Straight Talk Africa. How long can a head of state maintain effective leadership? Some African leaders are forced out of office, while others respect the political process. The politics of transition on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
This is Science in a Minute.
A recent study led by Columbia University's Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory provides evidence that a huge freshwater aquifer lies beneath the Atlantic Ocean just off the northeast coast of the United States. The study, published in the journal Nature Scientific Reports, suggests that the mostly freshwater supply is being held in poor sediments that lie below the ocean. The study authors say that the aquifer appears to be the largest found in the world so far, and that it extends about 80 kilometers from shore in Massachusetts down to at least New Jersey. The study suggests that the fresh water was fed to the aquifer from melting glacial ice about 15 to 20,000 years ago. The researchers noted that if the aquifer were found on the surface, it would create a lake covering some 39,000 square kilometers. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondence reports around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.